Welcome to Jim and Pat's Glasgow West End Chat. This is episode 102. And today, Pat chats to writer, broadcaster and multi-award-winning producer Billy Kay. A man, in fact, I interviewed myself on this very podcast a while back. And of course, enjoyed his company immensely. If you heard his chat, you will know that Billy has a particular passion for the Scots language. In fact, he delivered the Time for Reflection speech at the Scottish Parliament back in 2022. And that marked the first time it had ever been delivered entirely in Scots. Well done, Billy. But right now, Billy has a new book out and it's called Born in Kyle, A Love Letter to an Ayrshire Childhood. Which is why we have his pleasure today, pleasure of his company today, I should say, because he's out and about promoting the book, quite rightly, because it's a wonderful book. In fact, we attended one of his events just a couple of weeks ago at Glasgow University, where he read from it and regaled us all with many hilarious tales from within its covers. And I'll note, you can find out about Billy easily on the web. He's got his own website. I won't list all of his achievements, he's got plenty. But before we go over and listen to Billy and Pat, I should mention that there is a wee technical glitch on the podcast. Pat's side of the conversation ended up much quieter than Billy's. I don't know whether there was something not plugged in or something, but unfortunately, I did my best to try and even them up, but it was just not totally possible. So hopefully that does not spoil your enjoyment. I'll leave it at that and let you go and listen to Pat chatting to Billy Kay.
So you're just back from Belgium?
Yeah, we're over for a week in Brussels babysitting.
Good, that was nice.
And that was so that was hectic.
Right, well, I'm very happy to speak to you. Thanks for coming on. So today I'm speaking in the podcast to Billy Kay. I don't know where to start. Writer, broadcaster, linguist, and promoter of the Scots language. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. One or two other things, but that'll do.
I think
definitely.
Quite a few more strings to your bow. Jim's had you on the podcast before, Billy. So, mm-hmm. So you're the first person that will ever have been on our podcast twice.
Very good.
Jim had we have the same interest and obviously interested very much in your support for independence and your promotion that's all with Scots. But very recently, Jim and I both came along to an event at Glasgow University where you were talking about your book, Born in Kyle, A Love Letter to an Ayrshire Childhood. Well, it was fabulous. It was a
Thank you.
Brilliant, brilliant event. Enjoyed it so much. And you were really terrific. It just captured so much about Scotland, about Scots in social history and your part of the world and growing up. But it was also lovely because it was such a diverse audience and they were so captured, and people whose language wasn't English, well, the first language certainly wasn't Scots and it wasn't English, but they were sitting riveted and questions to ask, and it was just, it made me, I'd looked at the and read the Mother Tongue before one of your books, and I bought it really for my nephew in Canada. But after having gone to that event, it made me much more interested in your writing.
Right, right. Did it revive your own Scots? Did it revive your own language?
I can't tell you how much. I mean, I just loved it so much. And I've been putting up, occasionally I'll say on on Facebook, I'll say to people, what's your favourite Scots word? And, you know, people tend to like, they know, some words they're very familiar with, like sleekit and nyaf and glaikit, but it's great when they come on to other words. There's a terrible noise in here. So it very, very much revived my interest, and it quite tickles me to put up on social media. I'm just thinking about this word today, or describe something in Scots, and then encourage other people to say, what's your favourite word? And it can go on for a very long time. I think there is a renewed interest.
There is, and there's a lot of, even people that don't speak Scots, a dialect of Scots, they've got a tremendous passive knowledge of it that they're unaware of sometimes. Because if you were brought up in the lowlands of Scotland, you've got a knowledge of Scots, because it literally is. It's in the plants and the trees and the land and the lochs and the clouds and everything to do with the landscape and the city streets, et cetera, et cetera. So if you're from that environment, even though it may have been suppressed, sometimes politically suppressed and culturally suppressed, and even though it may have been, they may have tried to knock it out of you, you've still got that knowledge of it, which is innate to people who grew up in that environment.
That's exactly right. I mean, I think the thing for me is that I feel now more than I hadn't before, you get a real kick out of it. I mean, you get, it's such a, so descriptive, and you can't really translate it easily. And I like some of the examples you give yourself in the in your own writing, like a Gallus Chancer. I like that one. And a Thrawn Bism.
Thrawn wee Bism.
A Thrawn wee Bism. I mean, you know, it's just fascinating. And people, like you laughed saying that, but there's a, some of it there's a darkness, but a lot of it there's a humour. And I thought this was funny when you were saying to start off with safe words, like Ken Speckle. And then to walk a bit more on the wild side with Swally and Chip. And I kind of thought to myself, well, I'm in trouble because Swally and Chip would be more familiar to me.
They're your everyday vocabulary. Well, that shows you the kind of social background you come from, madam.
I think maybe I've worked too often as a barmaid.
Right.
And you know, but no, a lot of the words I don't know. A lot of the words are new to me, and but I'll remember them. I remember now that turkey is bubbly jock. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that, so I'm learning, and I think that that's your part of what you're wanting to do, is to extend the knowledge and to teach people, and I think there are different ways of doing that.
Yes, of doing that, that's right. I mean, there's a great Scots expression, which is tak tent or it's tint, take care or it's lost, mm-hmm. and that very much applies to Scots. And the whole rationale behind what I do was initially to create a very much a bilingual population, to show them that they've got this other way of expressing the world, and that it's not only as valid as English, but as far as expressing the culture and the people and the landscape of Scotland, it's more valid than English, because it comes out of that landscape. Mm-hmm. And that people and that culture. Mm-hmm. So, but it was to create a confidence in being bilingual. English is one of the most useful languages in the world. There's no getting away from that. So the last thing I want to do is ditch that very useful language. But it should never have been at the expense of the expense of Scots and Gaelic, for example, in Scotland. That's and it's right. That confidence in bilingualism, because ultimately, if you're bilingual, It's so easy to be multilingual, you know.
Yes, well, you're an example of that, yeah. Because you've got so many languages. I mean, I think part of it as well, I know for myself, I'm a bit older than you, but obviously some shared experiences. And I know, like, at school, there would be shame. You know, you would be corrected and you would be feel ashamed of saying, you know, if you say, like, you had a sair head, you know, that was wrong. You know, you would be get corrected to get on or to show you were intelligent. Even you had to be well spoken, and that certainly meant,
which is a loaded way of saying, expressing something, well spoken. And there are so many anomalies in that situation. I mean, I remember interviewing Willie McIlvany, a fellow Ayrshireman, a wonderful writer, mm-hmm. for the Scots the Mother Tongue television programme. And he gave the example of a teacher. He was a teacher himself, but another teacher in the school he worked at, punishing a wee boy for saying his head and his horn and his fit, and symbolically standing him beside the waste paper basket for a while as punishment. And while the wee boy was standing there, the headmaster of the school walked into the classroom and said to the teacher, "What's this you been doing new?" In other words, the headmaster was speaking the language the wee boy was being punished for. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from scenes like these, old Scotia's grandeur Disney spring, because it's outrageous mm-hmm. that you get these situations. And folk don't like to use the word colonised in the case of Scotland, because we took part in the colonisation of the British Empire. But as far as cultural colonisation is concerned, I'm afraid there was a lot of it in Scotland.
Oh, absolutely. And then it was passed on so much through your family, even. You know, my mother's family, they were Irish descent. My father actually used a lot of Scots. And certainly my grandmother, you know, his mother spoke a lot of Scots, and a lot of the older people beside us, you know, would say things. And we knew perfectly what they were saying. It wasn't that, you know, that was a language you were just as accustomed to. But we would be corrected, you know, not so much in our own house from my mum and dad's. They probably didn't have much time. There were seven of us, so they probably didn't have that much. But not so much in their own house. The aunties, you know, aunties and uncles, you know, to the extent. And like you, I was brought up in Oaklepatrick, so it was a village. So there was that sense of community. And some families came from the village. Like, so our family, McColgan, they were a family, there were other families, Kemps and Collins, like they came from the village. And you would be actually say, you know, if you said something, maybe you were going out to play, you would say, out, you're going out. And remember who you are, this sort of thing. So completely distorting your idea of where you were in the world.
Yes.
You know, just a complete distortion. And then, on the other hand, my father was a huge fan of Burns. We would have Robbie Burns. I think we still have it somewhere, like a silhouette up in, yes. in the wall. My father was a huge Burns fan. Well, that was you know, to admire that language, but then you weren't to use anything.
His language.
You know?
Yeah, well... One of the things I say in the mother tongue is one of the ironies of an Ayrshire childhood in the 50s was that you got a prize yeady a year for reciting Robbie's poetry and then the belt the other 360 power days for speaking his language. And, you know, that's an exaggeration, but there's a core of truth in that. And it's a ridiculous situation for a country that's got this brilliant linguistic and especially literary history. People say, oh, there's no difference between Scots and Scouse or Yorkshire. And I think the ignorance in that kind of statement you know, name the great medieval poets who wrote in Yorkshire, Lancashire, or Scouse or Somerset. You know, Scots is totally different. It's a brilliant European literary language with a pedigree going back 700 years. And it's a literary pedigree that is being revived, as it was revived by Burns in the 18th century, is being revived in the present day by brilliant writers. So it's ridiculous to compare it with a regional English dialect.
Now, people have said that to me too, said it's not a language, it's a dialect. And, you know, that's an absurd notion. And of course, it's been revived more in song as well.
Yes.
And you actually translated one of Jim's songs into Scots. I love that. And that goes, he sings that almost every event. He will sing the Scots song, and people really enjoy it.
Yes.
And they don't react in a way as, oh, what's this we're getting? Or
aye.
They're very open. No, so I can see him doing a bit more of that, because he did enjoy it very much, and he was so happy when you translated it, because I think he wasn't expecting that. I think he got in touch with you to ask if you could suggest anyone that might do it, and when he said you would do it, he was really, really dead pleased about that.
Great. Another one I translated was, it's in the book, The Scottish World. There was when the book came out, when we launched the book, we had musicians, my pals from Jock Tamson's Bairns, they sung some of the songs relevant to the chapters in the book. And one of them was, I discovered in one of my programs that a poet called Petter Dass, who's regarded as one of the great Norwegian poets from the 17th century, he was actually the son of a merchant from Dundee called Peter Dundas. So he would have grown up speaking Scots and Norwegian. Right. And his hymns are sung in the Norwegian and Danish church to this day. And one of them, I was given a CD of the choir from Bodø in northern Norway singing his hymns. And in among them, there was a wonderful song called Altar and Sacrament by the Dome Corps, the choir of the cathedral. And I translated that into Scots in the style of the 17th century. And my pal Rod Patterson sung it, and the Bairns sung it at the launch of the book. And Rod, in fact, has recorded it with some musicians, and it's beautiful because it's the revival of a Scoto-Norwegian poet from the 17th century.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is very unique, you know. Mm-hmm. You won't hear too many of those songs, but it's just amazing all the things that can happen. While you're talking about that, about the Norway. That's and moving on to your other book, The Scottish World, where you're talking about the Scottish diaspora and the Scots, how Scotland and Scots have impacted upon the internationally. I hadn't really, usually if you're thinking of the diaspora, you're kind of thinking Scots in Canada, and Scots and Australia, not so much Norway or Russia or any of these places. But I've not read all of that, but I've dipped into it quite a lot, and I've got it on my Kindle and been enjoying it. But one of the things that I absolutely loved and did read and was very interested in was it was us about the football. Mm-hmm. And how Scotland were responsible for the modern game, and you have that very thoroughly researched, so
yes,
with no end of proof.
absolutely. We really was us, and mm-hmm. when one of the biggest scunners in one's life is to hear the England fans singing, It's coming home, it's coming home. Uh-huh. Football's coming home. It can't come home to England because it was never at home in England. It was us that taught the English, well, the Norwegians, the Danes, everybody to kick a ball. It was us.
Well, definitely I would agree with you. And I was particularly interested in that because, and something that happened recently, I've always known, there's always been a story in our family that my grandfather, Patrick McColgan, when in the about 1924, 1925, he went out to America. He was a football coach here and worked with teams like Dundalker Hibs and so on. But he went out to America, to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, to set up. And, well, there was a football team established, but to build it up and bring players over from Scotland and from England. So I'd always known about this, but that was all. It was a story. But quite recently, my cousin had died, and then his wife died, my cousin Desmond McColgan and Catherine McColgan. They both died. So their daughter, Claire, got in touch with me to say that they'd been clearing out the house and they came across a medal. I've got it to show you. And this is the medal from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. It's got my grandfather's name on the back and the date. So it was 1924 to 1925. And it's the United States Football Association, the Bethlehem FC, won it that year.
Brilliant.
So there's actually quite a lot about it on the internet. And one of the things, and I just found this completely fascinating, there was a player that played with them called Archie Stark, and his family immigrated to America when he was 9. And he played for this team, Bethlehem FC, and he held the record in the most goals ever scored in a season. He held it for something like 82 years until Lionel Messi took over.
Brilliant.
So I enjoyed reading that so much because I'd just been thinking a lot about that recently. And then, I mean, football, I love football. Our whole family were mad on football.
Yeah.
But football is such a big thing internationally. And in Scotland is a small country, and they could do better, and we're always wanting to do better, but certainly they have had, as a country, it's had enormous impact on bringing that game.
Sure, I mean, definitely. There's a lovely quote in the mother tongue which shows how ancient the game is, where the king makes a proclamation to warn Scotsmen to practice their arms to defend the realm against England, invasion from England, instead of playing at the golf and the football. And it's something like, item it is decreed it and ordain it, that wapenshawns be holden 4 times in the year, and that the golf and the football be utterly cryet doon and nocht use it. So it's got a pedigree back 5 centuries at least. But it was the passing game pioneered by Queen's Park and clubs like that in the 19th century that led to the passing game taking over and replacing the dribbling and semi-rugby type game that was played in English public schools. You know, so it was definitely us. In my own area of the Irvine Valley, took football, one curtain firm, a lace mill in the Irvine Valley in New Mills, opened a factory in both Gothenburg and in Barcelona, and established football teams in both places. Mm. And a fascinating thing in the book is that the one in Barcelona, within about 2 years of them being established, big clubs were being formed in Barcelona, including FC Barcelona and Hispania. Mm. And one of the first derbies in Barcelona between Barcelona FC, probably the biggest club in the world, and Hispania had boys from both New Mills and Darvel in both teams because they were poached. They were poached by these big clubs in these early days of football because they had the knowledge. They were the skillful passing players. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know. And we're always shouting that, pass the ball. Always wanted to pass the ball. Now, I played hockey when I was at school, and I really liked hockey. And it's much the same, the same positions in the
ethos.
So no, I love when the World Cup's on. But no, that was a brilliant chapter in that book. I mean, the amount of information in it is, it must have taken you ages to research that.
Well, I was lucky in them. A lot of the chapters are based on research that I had made for radio documentaries.
Right.
So the merchants, peddlers, and mercenaries in the Baltic to Norway over the Fame, about Norway and Sweden, and the Scots in Hawaii, and I'd made series of programs, and you needed to research that for them, and you were distilling the very best and the most interesting material for the program, and then you were taking that out and reproducing it in the book. So I was already at a head start in a lot of the mind.
Because it really is, it's very, very, very impressive, you know, how the argument is built up, you know.
Yes.
It's very, I love your writing. You know, the Born in Kyle, I've been dipping into that a lot and enjoyed the event very, very much. And I can relate to a lot of, you know, where you were coming from at that time you're writing about, like in the 50s and the 60s. And the idea, you know, in the chapter, Haim, you talk about the community.
Uh-huh.
I think I mentioned this to you before about the old folk and about getting the wains to go the message.
Go their messages.
And you were just, like, as you say in the book, you would never, ever have dreamt of saying, no, I'm not going. You know, I mean...
You couldn't, no.
You know, you went... I was probably a wee bit older, but I know my brother, Danny, and after I'd been to your event at the university, I was talking to my sister about it. She's in Canada, and I was saying to her about Scots language and so on, and I was saying to her about the messages and about this old lady, Mrs. Doherty, that sent Danny messages, and then we would laugh because it would be, you know, a half a pint of Ingans and a packet of salt. And it was all, you know, it was all in Scots. And my sister, she said she went too. She said she used to send me too. And then when they would take the messages back up, she stayed up the top flat. She would give them a tea biscuit. That's what they got for going. They get a tea biscuit.
For going. All right. I would have demanded more than that. I wanted some money in my pocket.
I know, a threepenny at least.
Something like that. Yeah. Tell your sister that you can get the Kindle version in Canada, and you can get the Audible version. And that's a good way. If you know, a lot of people aren't used to reading Scots. Mm. They're used to hearing it. But if they have the Kindle in front of them and listen to an Audible, it's a great way for folk who are less familiar with the language to get into the book. A lot of people have been same with the mother tongue. A lot of people have enjoyed hearing it on Audible rather than just seeing it written down.
So that's a good idea. Have you got Born in Kyle anywhere there nearby?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Because I was wondering if you would be possible to read a wee bit, the bit that I loved at that event, and that people were really very taken by it, was the bit about Davy Crockett.
All right.
And
Haim, that's in Haim, I think. I think it's quite early on.
I thought it turned down.
Oh, what's always here? Let me see.
It's in Hame. It's in page round about 40.
40. Right. Do you want me to read that story?
Apart from anything else, I think the writing is fantastic. I mean, you're right there with that child and that experience.
Right. Remember, there's a couple of sweary words in that. So does your audience, can they handle a sweary word?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Okay. The other big cowboy disappointment in my Bairnhead came when the circus bringed into Gosson. As far as I can mind, it was the yin and only time only circus came to Gosson. They won it. It was the worst circus in the world. I probably persuaded the family to go because there was going to be an appearance at it by Davy Crockett, the real Davy Crockett, come all the road from Texas to appear like a god among the wains of Gosson. Wow. You see, I was looking for it, too. It was an undeemous understatement. I was ganting for it. My wee heart was thumping for it. I'm guy sure I was pooing my mother, my father, oor Mary, and oor Jeanette oot the door after we're tea to make sure we were there early enough, the front row seats close to the man himself. A bit like Wayne's the day with their replica Fitbit apps with the names of their heroes in the back, like Ronaldo or Messi, I went to the circus with my very own Davy Crockett hat, a fur bonnet, complete with what I was told was a raccoon's tail that trailed down the back of my neck. Near than lightly, on the walk down to the fairground next to the Irvine Water, I would have sung the song we all can't have be heard. Born on a mountain top in Tennessee, green estate in the land of the free, raised in the woods so we knew every tree, killed in my bar when he was only three. Davy Crockett, king of the wild frontier. At the circus tent, we were told we could sit in the wedding benches, the cheap seats, or we could pay double the price and go to the VIP section, where the only difference was the bit of blue cloth covering the same wedding seats. The Hale and Gosden sat on the cheap seats, except for maybe 12 families that owned businesses in the town and who sat in splendid isolation in the deer section. I wasn't bothered either way, because I was just there to see the man, to see Davy. The rest of the circus is just a blur in my head. Some jugglers, a toty wee buddy, a strong boy, and a clown that nobody laughed at, but imprinted indelibly. No, seared forever on my wee wan brain was the fanfare and the big announcement for the minute we'd all been waiting for. Davy Crockett! A wee buddy held back the flap of the big tent, and there, in front to her very inn, was an old how-backet donkey. And sitting in the chasm of the donkey's sairly deformed back was a wee manny in buckskins and a possum hat with a tail just like mine. It was so much like mine that it was probably booked in the same toy shop in Kilmore. When I was confronted with this Davy Crockett farce unfolding before me, I stared bum-based with my big een and said the wisest, truest words I'd uttered in all my 7 years on the planet. That's no Davy Crockett, Mum. What I really meant to say was, that's no fucking Davy Crockett, Mum. Do you think my head zips up the back? No. My fair wee mammy, my good hearted soul of a daddy, and my soft hearted sums of big sisters were drawing in all the resources of telling me that Santa Claus did in fact exist, and three-pone that this wee nyaff or a buckle on a how-backet donkey was indeed the king of the wild frontier, Richtin' Yuck. But I ken better, and they couldn't fucking diddle me. Like most folk my age, looking back over 7 decades, I've had to fool money disappointments that were ill to fool at the time. But realising that Davy Crockett wasn't ever coming to Gosden was doing there, among the war the dooley and dowie experiences of my lang life. Davy fucking Crockett, my ass. There you are.
That is fantastic. Thanks, Billy. You know, it just, I mean, what an image, you know, it just sort of builds up in the veins, feelings, you know, that terrible disappointment. No, that's. I mean, it's brilliant writing. It really is.
Thank you. There's another cowboy story also in the same chapter. A little fear. A chap that was visiting Annie and John Murray round the corner for me said he was going to America, and I would be about 5 at the time, and asked him if he would bring me back a horse, which I thought was a reasonable question to ask, because obviously he saw it in the movies, America was hoaching with hundreds and thousands of horses, so they wouldn't have missed one. And Wugs, his name was, Wugs said he would do his best to bring me back a horse. So literally 3 weeks later, I heard that he was back in town and he was round visiting Joan and Annie. So I went round the corner, literally fully expecting to see a horse grazing aside the Provost lamp in his grass, front grass in Welbeck Road in Gosden. But it wasn't there, but I went in. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Where's the horse?" And he said, "Billy, I did have a horse for you. And I had it tied on the deck of the ship, and as we were leaving the harbour in New York, a cowboy came to the shore and whistled, and the horse yanked up its head, freed himself for its reins for the barrier, louped into the water, and swam back to the cowboy in New York." And I said, "Could you know I tied it up?" And the man said, you know, the look in the man's face tell me that he did his best. Oh. So I could, you know, but I thought to myself, God, the street cred I could have had in Gosden with my own horse up the scheme would have been fantastic.
I know.
And I was doing that.
But you could still have told him about the horse he nearly had.
And
about
that's right.
He was a bit of a storyteller too.
Exactly. And it was interesting, the patter that went on there. Actually, an interesting story by the way, if anybody that's read the book, please mention on Amazon, because it's a new book, the mere folk that say something about it and rate it, get it on Amazon, the better. If you could do that. Anyway, I had a really positive experience. I think it was about last week. I went on to see if there was any new mentions of the book on Amazon. And on the hardback bit, there was a review by this chap. And when I saw the first sentence, I thought, oh no, what's this going to be like? Because he said, as the grandson of the painter Davy that's mentioned on page 12, and my brain's immediately going, oh no. Davy is mentioned as belonging to the community, but being a bit of a Pear Sewell because he had an alcohol problem. And everybody kent, brilliant painter though he was, you never gave him money until the job was done. Now, I never named him by name, but I just tell the story. And Obdi and Gosden kens what I was talking about. Anyway, out of the blue, a review on Amazon, and it's his grandson. And wait for it. His grandson loved the book and didn't he mind the description of his grandpa, thought it was accurate. But also, he uses an expression like, he has got a Zola-esque descriptive power about Ayrshire in that period. No, I think that's fantastic. But I love the idea of the democratic intellect, of the working-class intellectual tradition that you get in Scotland that goes back to at least to the time of the Reformation, when we were one of the earliest people in the world to be able to read and write because it was part of the Scottish desire for equality, egalitarianism. But the fact that the grandson of Davy has read Emile Zola and could make the comparison, I just thought was out of this world. So if Davy's grandson happens to be watching it, I love being I love being compared to Zola, but I also love the fact that Davy's grandson had read Zola and could compare my book to Zola. Yeah.
No, I enjoyed listening to you and Jim talking about that whole idea of the educated working class in Scotland and the how people read and loved to discuss things, and a lot of it was a lot of it was political as well, and that I could relate to that with my own my own father, and because he was a turner, he didn't go to war or anything because he worked in the torpedo factory, you know, making ammunition. But he right beside where he sat, he came in. He had his own. He'd built a bookcase, you know. Yep. So we, we had encyclopedias, you know, the big set that were quite expensive. We were to be careful with them.
Yes.
They'd been expensive, probably paid up.
But, aye.
But there was very much a tradition of going to the library and seeing. You know, very.
There'd probably be the Encyclopedia Britannica you had,
yeah,
which was
a
Scottish invention. It was an 18th century Scottish. Yeah.
That's it.
Again, it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My brother still has them. Yeah, no, that was. I enjoyed that, and then I enjoyed listening to you talking about the Scottish independence, and I think that you're making a really brilliant contribution to that. Through this idea of sort of, you know, resurrecting this a cultural, you know, Scotland's own culture and being proud of it, you know, the kind of opposite of the Scottish cringe.
That's right. Yeah. No, the cringe is a deplorable thing. I mean, some of the I've collected them over the years, and there've been some absolutely brammers. One I just remembered was a. This was a 20 year ago, but there was a discussion in across the water here in Dundee for Tayside Region, the Education Committee. Somebody had put forward the notion that Scottish studies should become part of the curriculum. Mm-hmm. And a Labour convener replied, "Oh no, we live in a multicultural society." In other words, every culture was to be taught except their own one, you know?
Exactly.
No, we can't teach Scottish studies because we live in a multicultural society. Mm. I mean, that kind of thickness is almost too thick to describe, and but it's there, that mentality.
That's right, I know. I studied history at Glasgow University, and there was no Scottish history. I mean, you could get a degree at Glasgow University without doing any Scottish history. I swapped in my second year and moved to do Scottish history.
So yes.
Because I didn't know anything about it. I didn't. I left school very, very, very before I was supposed to leave because of a family situation. So it was all new to me, and you know, it was disappointing to be at university studying history, but you didn't get taught. I mean, you get medieval history,
and yes,
some economic history, but you didn't get Scottish history. Mm.
And did you change to a Scottish history degree?
I changed to Scottish history sociology, but then I changed back for my honours because. I don't know. I think my advisor had said, you know, it's not a sort of. There were only two people, myself and one other person, doing history and sociology, and there was nobody else doing Scottish history. But I was glad I did it for that time and got some knowledge about it. You know, not that I remember everything, but. You know, I mean, you didn't get taught much Scottish history in school either.
No, not at school. We got a wee bit in primary school. We got a bit about the Wars of Independence in primary school. And that stayed with me, that memory, stories of Wallace and Bruce. I grew up with that because Ayrshire is full of stories of Wallace and Bruce. Mm-hmm. And my granny stayed in Standalane Street. And that's a legend from Wallace's day, where he said, "I stand alone," when some of his followers run away, hearing about the approach of a huge English force against him. Mm-hmm. Wallace was there, said, "I stand alone." Mm-hmm. And Bruce, was in prison for a wee while in the Bar Castle in Galston, and they managed to escape that. In fact, in the frontispiece of Born and Kyle, there's two lines from John Barber's poem, The Bruce, from that period, the 14th century, written about 100 years later. And it's the king lay into Golestoun that is recht even anent Loudoun. So here's Gostin and Loudoun mentioned in one of the great early.
Yeah. I love that. Early. That's Dandelion Street.
Aye.
Billy, well, I remember, that was awful about I Write. Just unbelievable. So you had an event coming up in that?
I had an event with a wonderful traditional singer, Robin Stapleton. Mm-hmm. And there's a chapter called Or the Earths or the Gloaming Grey, where I talk about the literary tradition and the song tradition in Ayrshire. Mm-hmm. And I mention Burns and Tannehill, the Paisley, and Alan Ramsey, who wrote The Lass of Patey's Mill, which is set in the Irvine Valley. And when I did the launch of the book at the National Library, Robin came along and sung about four or five songs. And it was a wonderful combination. The two of them. So we were set to do it again at I Write, and then suddenly I Write falls apart. And it's, I can't tell you what a big blow it is for a small publisher like me, because it's almost impossible to get a book in Scots from a small publisher into bookshops. They're just no interested. They're no interested in the hassle of creating a new supplier, having one or two copies. So it's almost impossible. So the only place you can sell books is either through Amazon or at engagements. Mm-hmm. So when you get a major engagement like I Write closing down, that could mean, you know, the loss of maybe 20% of my sales mm-hmm. from the book this year, mm-hmm. because it's a big festival, I Write. There's great football, and you'd have got a big audience. Yeah. So very, very frustrating. I'm doing one. I'm doing some library events, but no in Glasgow.
Right. Okay. But I Write, I think, are going to be planning some pop-up events. So I think somebody has come to their rescue a bit.
That's right. I read about that, but so far there's been no approach. So I'll keep my fingers crossed.
I'll approach them.
That's good to do.
I'll put in the request.
You do that. Well, if you look up Robin Stapleton online, she's one of the great Scottish traditional singers. So the combination of my Scottish writing and her Scottish singing is beautiful. It's a lovely combination.
I would definitely have been going to that. You know, it's so disappointing. But people can find out about your website's great. It's a very, very informative.
I've got my dates there.
On that.
The Boswell Book Festival in Ayrshire is coming up in the middle of May, and it's a good one.
Yeah. So people are want to find out about events. They get them very easily on your website. Google Billy Kay, and they'll find out. So, but I hope to get along to see you again. How do you pronounce your wife's name?
It's Joan.
I see your wife quite a lot, and tell me again, Joan.
It's Joan. Joan.
Joao. Because I was never she's an absolutely lovely looking woman. She's really lovely.
Thank you.
I saw your photograph of your wedding, because I think it was your anniversary.
Anniversary on Sunday.
Your wedding photograph is lovely. You in your kilt and the most gorgeous wife. Beautiful, beautiful photograph. Yeah.
Thank you. I'll pass that
congratulations
away.
Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Du revoir.
So, but listen, Billy, it's been great talking to you again. And Jim and I'll definitely get along to another event and hopefully see you in September in Glasgow
Very
with
good.
the
Very good.
residents of Diorite. But thanks very much. And I can't recommend your book enough, Vaughan and Kyle.
Thank
Fantastic.
you.
Fantastic. It's great. And I'll put something up on Amazon. So
Great.
thanks very much and good luck
Thanks.
with
Thank you
everything.
very much. Lovely to talk to you again.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Billy. Bye. Bye.
Bye-bye.
I'll join in with the thanks. Thanks, Pat. Thanks, Billy. And that's the end of another episode of Jim and Pat's Glasgow West End Chat. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. And I'll catch you the next time. Bye for now.